Welcome. Today we're diving into a topic that many people have heard of but may not fully understand, wrist fractures, also known as distal radius fractures. We'll break it down in a way that's easy to follow, whether you're a patient or just someone curious to learn more. The information shared in this deep dive comes from the Hand Education section of OrthoEducation.com, a free, high-quality, peer-reviewed resource designed to help patients better understand musculoskeletal conditions. Please remember, this discussion is for general educational purposes only. If you're dealing with a musculoskeletal problem or have concerns about your health, be sure to consult a trained healthcare professional. So we are jumping right into probably the most common broken bone in the arm, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Statistically, if you break an arm bone, chances are pretty high it's going to be the wrist.
And it often comes down to that that instinctive reaction, doesn't it? Falling onto an outstretched hand.
Exactly. That's the classic mechanism. And when we say distal radius fracture, or DRF for short, we mean a break right near the wrist end of the radius.
This is the bigger of the two forearm bones.
Correct. And, you know, what's interesting is who gets these. It really spans all ages, but the reasons can be totally different.
That context seems really important.
Yeah.
I mean, the injury itself depends on both the force of the fall and, well, how strong the bone is to begin with.
Absolutely. It's a spectrum. You could have an older person, maybe with osteoporosis, who falls from just standing height and gets a significant fracture.
Right. Low energy, but weak bone.
Exactly. Then on the other end, you have a younger person, maybe in a skiing accident or a car crash.
High energy.
High energy, strong bone, but the force is just overwhelming, leading to a potentially very complex break. It's all about that energy transfer.
Okay. So let's say someone's had a fall. Their wrist hurts badly. They're in the ER. What's the first thing a doctor does, even before x-rays? What are they looking for?
Well, the first step is always the history, asking, you know, how exactly did this happen? Did you fall on your palm, the back of your hand? That gives us clues. Then comes the physical exam. We're looking for the obvious signs, significant swelling, bruising, sometimes a very clear deformity.
That dinner fork look people talk about.
That's the classic description for a certain type, yes. And of course, the key symptom is pain. Severe pain, especially when they try to move the wrist or make a fist.
Okay, so the suspicion is high. Hmm. Then comes imaging. X-ray is the standard, you said.
X-ray is definitely the workhorse. It tells us if it's broken, where it's broken, and generally what type of break it is.
But your source mentions CT scans sometimes. If X-rays show the break, why the extra step? When is a CT scan really necessary?
That's a really good point. It mainly comes down to planning for surgery, especially if we suspect the break goes right into the joint surface itself, the articular surface.
Into the moving part of the wrist.
Exactly. An x-ray might show that, but a CT gives us incredibly fine three-dimensional detail. Surgeons need to see that joint surface almost like a map.
To put it back together perfectly.
Precisely. If that joint surface doesn't heal smoothly, it's a setup for arthritis later on. So, for complex breaks involving the joint, CT is invaluable for planning that reconstruction.
Got it. So the goal isn't just, is it broken, but how badly and does it affect the joint?
That's the key. Understanding the severity to pick the best treatment path.
Okay, let's unpack the different types. This can get a bit confusing with all the names.
Yeah.
You mentioned fractures are grouped based on how the bone broke and how much it shifted.
That's right. The simplest way to start thinking about it is based on whether the pieces have moved.
Okay.
So first, you have undisplaced fractures. The bone is cracked, maybe broken through, but the pieces haven't shifted. They're still lined up correctly.
So stable, generally easier to treat.
Generally, yes. These are often stable and might just need a cast.
And the other category?
Displaced fractures. Here, the broken pieces have moved out of their normal alignment. They've shifted.
So inherently less stable.
Correct. These are more likely to need some kind of intervention, maybe surgery, to get them lined up again.
Now, this is where those classic names come in, right? Based on the direction of that displacement, can you walk us through the main ones?
Absolutely. The most common one, by far, is the collis fracture. Think of falling onto your outstretched palm.
Right.
The force pushes the broken end of the radius backward towards the back of your hand. We call that dorsal displacement. That's what often causes that dinner fork appearance.
Okay, so collis equals backward displacement from falling on the palm. What's the opposite?
The opposite pattern is the Smith fracture. It's less common. Here, the broken piece is pushed forward towards the palm side. Volar displacement.
How does that usually happen?
Often from falling onto the back of your hand or maybe onto a bent wrist. Because it pushes into that tighter space on the palm side, it can sometimes be a bit more unstable.
Got it. Collis backward, Smith forward. Then there's the Barton fracture. That one sounds more complex.
It is, because it specifically involves the joint surface. A Barton fracture is a type of displaced fracture where a piece of the radius, including a part of the joint surface, shears off and shifts either forward or backward along with the wrist bones.
Ah, so a chunk of the joint platform breaks off and moves.
Exactly. And because that smooth joint surface is disrupted and unstable, Barton fractures almost always need surgery to restore it properly.
That makes sense. You can't leave the joint surface uneven. That leads us to those other key terms you mentioned, complexity modifiers.
Right. The first big one is intra-articular fracture. This just means the fracture line itself extends into the wrist joint.
Like we discussed with the CT scans.
Precisely. Any break that crosses into that smooth cartilage surface is considered intra-articular. It automatically makes it more serious because of the risk of future arthritis if it's not perfectly aligned.
And the other term was comminuted fracture.
Yeah, comminuted simply means the bone is broken into multiple fragments, like shattered glass, rather than just two main pieces.
Okay, so lots of little bits.
Lots of little bits. This usually results from higher energy injuries and creates a lot more instability. It's much harder to put back together and hold in place.
We have been talking about wrist fractures, also known as distal radius fractures, based on information from the hand education section of the free and peer-reviewed patient education website, OrthoEducation, at www.orthoeducation.com. Okay, so shifting gears from diagnosis to treatment.
Yeah.
If someone's lucky enough to have one of those non-displaced stable fractures, what's the plan?
Well, for those, the mainstay is non-surgical management. Usually that means putting the wrist in a splint initially, then often a cast, to hold everything still while it heals.
For how long, typically?
Often around 6 weeks, sometimes a bit less, sometimes more, depending on the specifics. But crucially, even with a cast, we need regular checkups with x-rays.
Why is that, if it's stable?
Because even in a cast, sometimes fractures can shift slightly in those first couple of weeks as the initial swelling goes down.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure it stays in that good position.
Okay. And what's the key advice for the patient while they're stuck in that cast? Must be tough.
It is. The absolute key things are keep your fingers moving. Wiggle them constantly to prevent stiffness. And second, absolutely no heavy lifting with that hand.
Not even like a coffee mug.
Honestly, in the early stages, even that might be too much torque. You really want to protect it.
Okay. Now, what about that middle ground? A fracture that is displaced, but maybe not shattered or severely into the joint. You mentioned closed reduction and casting.
Right. Closed reduction is a technique where the doctor, usually with some form of anesthesia or sedation for the patient's comfort, physically manipulates the broken bone fragments back into a better alignment without making any cuts.
So pushing and pulling from the outside.
Essentially, yes. Once a good enough position is achieved, a cast is put on immediately to hold it there.
Why choose this over surgery if it was already displaced?
It's often a great option, particularly for older patients, maybe those with weaker bones due to osteoporosis. For them, achieving perfect, millimeter-precise alignment might not be as critical for good function as it is in a younger, high-demand person.
So it's about balancing risks and benefits.
Exactly. If we can get acceptable alignment without surgery, avoiding the risks of anesthesia, infection, nerve irritation, however small, can be the better choice, especially in less active individuals. But again, close x-ray follow-up is vital to make sure it doesn't slip again in the cast.
Which leads us to surgery. When does that become the necessary next step if the closed reduction doesn't hold?
That's a major reason. If the fracture is inherently unstable, meaning it just slips back out of place even after reduction, or if it's significantly displaced into the joint or highly comminuted, then surgery is usually recommended.
And the main goal of surgery here is?
The goal is anatomical restoration, to put the pieces back exactly where they belong and hold them there securely so the bone heals in the right shape. This is all about preventing long-term pain, stiffness, and arthritis.
When people think wrist surgery, they often picture a plate and screws. Is that the most common approach?
Yes, currently the most common method, especially for many displaced fractures, involves using a metal plate and screws. Usually it's placed on the volar side, the palm side of the wrist.
How does that work?
The surgeon makes an incision, carefully moves tendons and nerves aside, puts the bone fragments back in perfect alignment, and then fixes them with a specially shaped plate that contours to the bone, held in place by locking screws. It provides really strong, stable fixation right away.
Are there other options besides plates and screws? Like those external frames?
Absolutely. Things like pins or an external fixator that's the frame outside the skin connected by pins going into the bone might be used.
When would you use an external fixator? It sounds quite different.
An external fixator, or X-fix, is often used for very severe fractures, maybe ones that are extremely comminuted or open fractures where the bone has broken through the skin, increasing infection risk.
Ah.
It provides excellent stability, holding the wrist out to the right length without needing extensive dissection around shattered bone fragments right away. It can be a temporary measure or sometimes the definitive treatment, especially if there's significant soft tissue damage.
Okay, so surgery gets the bones lined up,
Yeah.
but recovery, that's the long haul, isn't it? How long does that typically take?
Recovery definitely takes time. You're looking at bone healing first, which usually takes about 6 to 8 weeks before the fracture is solid enough to start pushing things.
But just because the bone is healed doesn't mean the wrist works normally yet, right?
Not at all. That's just phase one. Phase
Okay.
two is rehabilitation, and that takes much longer.
And this is where physical therapy comes in. How critical is that?
It's absolutely essential. After weeks of being immobilized, whether in a cast or even after surgery, the wrist will be stiff. Weakness is also a given. So a really good rehab program, usually guided by a physical or occupational therapist who specializes in hands, is key.
What's the focus?
It's all about regaining motion bending, straightening, rotating the wrist, building back grip strength, and improving overall flexibility. If you skip or skimp on the therapy,
You risk long-term problems.
definitely. You risk ending up with permanent stiffness or weakness that really impacts your daily life. Good therapy makes a huge difference.
Looking at the big picture, then, after all this,
Yeah.
treatment, rehab, what's the general outlook? Do most people get back to normal?
For the majority of wrist fractures, yeah, the prognosis is actually quite good, especially if they get the right treatment early on and stick with the rehab plan.
But not always on 100% recovery.
Not always, especially with the really severe ones, those badly comminuted or intra-articular fractures. Some people might have a bit of residual stiffness, maybe lose a little bit of motion or grip strength compared to their other side. Often it's minor and doesn't limit them much, but it's possible.
And what are the potential bumps in the road? Complications to watch out for even after healing.
Well, the most common issues are stiffness and sometimes chronic pain, especially if rehab wasn't completed fully. There's also the risk of developing arthritis in the wrist joint down the line, particularly if that joint surface wasn't perfectly restored.
Any other risks?
Nerve irritation can happen, sometimes leading to carpal tunnel syndrome because the space in the wrist is tight and can be affected by swelling or slight changes in alignment. And really importantly for older adults,
Yes.
a wrist fracture can be the first warning sign of osteoporosis, weak bones. That significantly increases their risk for other potentially much more serious fractures later, like a hip fracture.
Yeah.
So it's a cue to check bone density.
That's a crucial point. So, wrapping this up for someone learning about this,
Yeah.
it really strikes me how critical that wrist joint is for just about everything we do.
It really is.
Considering that, what stands out to you about the difference between, say, a relatively simple Cols fracture where the bone is pushed back versus one of those complex intra-articular fractures that actually goes into the joint surface? What are the lifelong implications tied just to that specific location of the break?
We have just discussed wrist fractures based on information from the free, easy-to-understand patient education website, OrthoEducation, available at www.orthoeducation.com. Please remember, this discussion is for general educational purposes only. If you're dealing with an injury or have concerns about your health, be sure to consult a trained healthcare professional.